Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. We are talking NXT for January 3rd, 2023. First time I had to say 2023, and I nailed it, folks. I got it right the first time. I had to write a check. You remember those? I had to do one of those. Also nailed that. It's going to be a great year. My memory.
How old are you?
Has gotten better. Well, you know, in fairness, it was a business check. I do not have any checks that say Kelly Wells on them, but the business that I co-run that says Ultimate Collectibles, we have checks for that. We don't accept them, but we do write them. It's very hypocritical, folks. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. You might be able to see me tweeting tonight. I don't know what tonight will bring, folks, but I want to watch the New Japan show live. I do that a couple of times a year, usually when they're on a friendlier time of day, but this one's going to be like midnight to 7 a.m. local. Yeah, it's going to be really that long, folks, like 6 or 7 hours, counting the pre-show. Oh, gosh, it does seem dumb now that I say it aloud, but maybe I'll do it anyway. Let's talk main event, and you can call us 515-605-9345. It's a go-home show, so I doubt anybody's listening anyway. But in case you are, that's what you can do. Okay. Kofi Kingston versus, now that's not the main event. The main event is a segment, folks. Bron Breakker versus Grayson Waller is coming next week on New Year's Evil. And it'll be a pretty good big versus small kind of match with the small cheating in every way he can. I think it will be enjoyable. What was less enjoyable was this entire segment. Might as well get the worst thing out of the way first.
It wasn't the worst thing on the show.
Oh, I
think. Arguably, yes.
You know what? The women's segment was bad, but for the first time in a long time, a battle royal was actually set up organically. So I gave it like the smallest of passes, even though it was not well conceived or well written or well acted or well anything. Otherwise, it was fine.
Okay.
So let's talk about that main segment. Grayson Waller kind of, I don't know. This seemed dead on arrival. It really did. It seemed like they didn't know where they were going. It seemed like pages of it were missing. I was on stage once in a production of To Kill a Mockingbird, and the dude playing Tom Robinson accidentally skipped two pages, and it threw the scene into chaos in a way that made the show 15 minutes longer that night than it had ever been. I got very much the same vibes from this scene, except there was no seasoned actor on the stage to say, hey, maybe get back on track with this. It was messy, but they did get to the point at the end. Outside of, I'll let you guys cover what sucked about it, because there were many things, but what was interesting about this was that the babyface champion stood tall on the go-home show. That doesn't happen very often. So maybe that's just a red herring for all of us to say, oh, Braun's time is up. And, of course, then he just wins like he always does with the spear and drives him through and it's done. But it really could be that that double switch where Braun got to stand tall here because Grayson's getting his shine. 7 days from now, Bruce Hazelwood, who are you?
I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And dead on arrival, Braun seemed to forget his lines, so he just kind of no-sold everything Waller was saying, more than the table no-sold Alpha Flyer earlier in the night. So that was weird. And it just seemed like, again, he forgot his lines. And you could clearly see that during this segment because he kind of went from saying, you know how I can compliment you, and then I don't know if saying you know how to go viral is necessarily a compliment, but that might have been it. It just was a weird transition to get to that point and didn't really make sense. Waller did what he could. Breaker, like you said, it's weird to see him stand tall. But then again, Breaker has also generally been booked as a strong champion who, while dumb, defends his title and doesn't back down from fights. So, and Waller hasn't necessarily been booked as someone who can physically overpower or physically get the better of baby faces in these kind of segments. So I think in that sense, if you look at the characters as a whole, then there's a little more, I guess, coherency to that than just, wow, it's weird to have the babyface champion be the one to stand tall on the go-home show. But beyond that, there just wasn't much greatness to the segment. Even Breaker saying, you want something viral and doing the dive over the top, that was cool, but he didn't even aim the camera at himself or while he was doing the dive or anything. So kind of missed the point because it was probably a really – even though a moving video like that's gonna be bad, it's probably even worse when it's not pointed at what you want to actually go viral. So, all that said, I do think I'm still agreeing with you, Kelly, in that this was probably set for Waller to become champion through some nefarious means. It protects Breaker, but and it also gives that one up, I guess, to Waller's character as that brash, cocky dude, but he'd be getting the stuff done. So when he has that title next to him, it just adds a little more credence, I guess, for some people. Like, I know Darrell, as negative as that sounds. But I think that Waller is a perfect I don't want to say transition as a bad thing. I think moving on from Breaker is a transition regardless. But I think he will serve better because he has more flair, personality, obviously, character development that I think will be able to attract, not viewers necessarily, but I think just make the show feel a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Good.
Good, yeah. I was going to say must-watch, but not necessarily must-watch. Just better, so that you don't come into it every week and thinking, oh, crap, here we go again. So I feel like they need to make that transition from Breaker now. He was champion for most of 2022, and it just, like we've discussed multiple times, it just, we would forget that he's champion because there just wasn't anything there for us. Nothing memorable, nothing impactful as a character. So move on, let him debut in the Rumble and go from there, and then 3-hour Raw for someone like Breaker, do that, and then let us go with Waller as champion and hopefully have NXT just go on upward trajectory from there.
Yeah, I just don't get the empty calories of Bron Breakker. Like, I would expect to ask the person who decided to book him as champion for 10 months, like, what's your favorite kind of yogurt? And they'd say plain. that's not a flavor. I don't know. I won't belabor it. We genuinely forgot who was champion often on this show, and we watch it every week. For the first time since the last PLE, folks, we've got a full house. Nate Lindberg, who are you?
Oh, I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up for tonight's show. So I pretty much agree with you guys across the board with this segment here, except for one thing. And there's just one thing that I did think was halfway decent about the segment. Not enough to save it, but if we're going to point out the bad, may as well point out something that I did think was good, was at least there was a little bit of character development for Bron Breakker. Not much, but a little bit. We basically saw him come out and, you know, be calm, cool, and collected while Grayson Waller is trying to egg him on, which has kind of been his MO throughout this feud anyway. But it really wasn't until the end of the end of the segment when Grayson Waller started to verbally attack his father, Rick Steiner, and say, I think he said something else after that too. I forget whatever the second thing he said was the straw that broke the camel's back, and Bron Breakker, you know, wound up attacking Grayson Waller, you know, and at that point, I think it was kind of warranted, especially, you know, not in real life anyway, I'd still just walk away, but in a wrestling show, definitely, So I got to at least point that out. That's really the only redeeming quality that I can find about the segment. Otherwise, I'm pretty much right on board with you guys. This did not seem like it should be in the main event spot. If anything, put Kofi Kingston in the main event spot. He's the bigger star anyway. I know, obviously, you're trying to build stars here in developmental, but if this was the segment they were going to deliver, I don't know, maybe put it on like mid-show main event or something like that. I have a bit of an issue with the way the order of the show was booked tonight. I don't really know how you'd fix it, but at the same time, I get a couple of gripes, and we'll get there when we get there. But yeah, otherwise, like I said, I'm pretty much in agreement with you guys.
I would love to flip this and Fire versus Dawn, but I understand that on a go-home show, you want this to be the hook. You want to set a right. hook and not finish something on a show that, man, New Year's Evil has so much stuff on it that I'm pretty sure the Fire Dawn match should have probably been on instead of some of those matches, but I don't know. Maybe we'll get there, and they'll all be bangers. And
pain in the ass to cover next week.
You have to cover it.
A gauntlet match and a battle royal.
Yeah, and here I was thinking maybe we were square, so you were covering it tonight, and I was next week. I did not know the bullet I was dodging an hour ago. But I know it now. You can call us 515-605-9345. We got one caller today. That is our friend Ryan in Cumberland. We're not going to be super negative about the whole show. We got much of that out of the way. But let's get to some other things. Ryan, what did you think of the go-home show tonight?
It was just an average show. I think everyone's waiting for next week where it's a loaded show.
Yeah, they. We've seen some good go-home shows from this brand, but this was pretty pedestrian. What do you have for thoughts?
First question is on this female battle royal. Do you think Cora Jade's the odds-on favorite to win this 20-woman battle royal?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a bit of been there, done that for Roxy and Cora. But they've got enough time to build it that maybe that is the way to go. Otherwise, it seems like the other women in this thing that are semi-important are the baby faces. Otherwise, you could. It just also seems like there are a lot of not ready for primetime faces in this division. We got characters that I'd like to see in the spot. Like the character of Lash Legend, I think would be great in this spot, but I still think if you push her too much too fast, I think the progression is going well now, and the worst thing they could do is give her too much right now. And I think that would break her in much the same way that that Nikita Lyons has been overexposed as she's been put in positions where she just doesn't have the talent to deliver yet. And if she's ever going to have it, all this stuff has been on film, unfortunately. Cora might be that person. And if not her, I guess that Zoe would be my best guess. Of course, getting Alba Fire and Isla Dawn out of the way here, they could do Isla Dawn here as well. I think that Roxanne would not be well served by being in a face versus face thing. Her plucky underdog babyface thing is everything she has. So you can't be booking babyfaces against her to do that kind of match. I think it really undercuts what they're trying to do with how sympathetic she's going to be. I think I've talked myself into it being Zoe Stark. Although the last time they did a battle royal, she won that too. So maybe she gets to win back to back. Let me keep mulling this over as I throw to Nate Lindberg.
I think that we may potentially see the return of Tiffany Stratton in this match.
And oh, we might see, sure.
and we may see her come out victorious. That's kind of – that's really the only thing. It's really the biggest thought in my head. If it's not her, and it's – because I know I did read something that she's planning on coming back or her return is going to coincide with New Year's Evil anyway. So it could certainly be her. But if not, basically what you just said, you know, either, you know, Cora, Zoe, somebody like that. But I think we're going to see Tiffany Stratton come back and potentially win this.
Yeah, they showed the on the screen, they showed the 20 women that are in it. And I didn't make a point to write down who they all were. Tiffany was not there, but that doesn't mean she can't attack, I don't know, Amari Miller, Ariana Grace.
That's exactly what I would say.
Is somebody in the back and take their spot. And, you know, of course.
Well, yes, of course.
That is the most overdone thing in the world, which is a sign they'll probably do it, because that spot and the, oh, my gosh, that heel was just outside the ring the whole time. And then they threw out the last person at the end. They love those spots, and they don't seem to know how often they do them. Bruce, what do you think?
I mean, the former Michael McGillicuddy was in the Royal Rumble for a whole year because of that, after all. So it is a world they go to a lot. The graphic they have on Twitter from the show does have 20 women on it. I don't know a couple of them because I don't watch Level Up enough. I probably know them by name from listening to Tom on Bonus Point. But they could do that, or they could just keep Stratton out of it and let her continue, because I don't think even if you bring Stratton back, she's going to win the title this early. And I think for Stratton, she's someone with that trajectory where I think you bring her back where she's going to win the title. And the thing with Jade, to Ryan's question, I think you hold off on that. I think you save that for when you think – so I just said you hold off on Stratton to become champion for this. But I think if you're going to do Jade at some point, that's when you put the title on Jade. So I think you want to extend that out. And not do it right away. Thing was, for Perez, the journey was a big thing, a big part of the whole story. But it's also that they're now transitioning away from, you know, Mandy Rose, what that whole 400 and something days was about. I defended her in terms of her title defenses, but just like with Bron Breakker, there wasn't much about her reign that was memorable and drew us to want to watch her. So they have a chance here with Roxanne Perez in terms of that sort of plucky underdog baby face, I think, in the women's division in NXT that they probably haven't had since Bayley. They really have a shot here if they just continue to give her obstacles to overcome. So if you're looking at the list, you know, I think a dark horse is Lyra Valkyria. She's on the front row, and so she hasn't really been kind of nebulous right now in terms of her disposition. So you could do that if you want to go with an easy face matchup. Although I don't think she's ready, you could do Sol Ruka because of how much she's getting in terms of virality because of her finisher, the Soul Snatcher. But then I think here, best thing to cap it off and to kind of give her a first title defense and to wrap up an ongoing storyline is Indy Hartwell. And she, you know, she's been in the Iron Survival Challenge. She was in the other Battle Royal. She was doing well. I think this might be the moment you have Indy win, because it's one of those matches where I don't think anybody really, unless you go in there and you pull a Titus O'Neil on the way to the ring, or you get eliminated 1 second like Santino or the Warlord, then I don't think you're really losing anything in this kind of a match. So I think you can have Hartwell win here and try, in the lead up to the match at Vengeance Day, just have her reinforce how she's going to teach Roxanne it's not just, you know, roses and daisies and whatever other analogies you want to apply, and try and smarten her up, quote unquote, and use that as fuel and have that happen in the match, but then Roxanne overcome that and defeat her. And you can either do a begrudging show of respect after, or have Indy go heel. It doesn't really matter, but I think right here with the 20 women that are on the graphic, I probably go with Indy Hartwell.
You know, I just don't think of Indy, even when like, I know who's on the table. Like, she just doesn't occur to me for this spot. But, I mean, if they're sending signals, like they tend to do sometimes, they sent a signal of Indy because she was the first one out there to answer the call. And they do that sometimes with video packages, like with the triple threat with the women where Io Shirai was the first and the last part of the video package. And I'm like, she's winning this match. And she did, of course, pinned Rhea Ripley, I think, or whoever in the three way.
Yeah. She did for Charlotte.
Oh yeah. But yeah, it's,
and again, you have that background story of Indy the last couple of months trying to be realistic, but still be a friend to Roxanne in a certain way. And so I think that's a real good kind of anchor you have for the story going into the match at Vengeance Day.
Yeah, and she accidentally gives Roxanne the tools to beat her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the killer instinct. Go ahead, Nate.
The only thing that, and please don't get me wrong, because I would love to see Indy Hartwell in this position, but the only thing that makes me a little bit hesitant is, did you hear the lack of pop for her when she came out tonight?
Did you hear the lack of pop for everybody?
Yeah,
well,
it was like really quiet. I know. But that's a consistent thing with Indy Hartwell. She never gets a pop that, like, good or bad. It's kind of just a muted reaction. I hate saying that, but it's definitely something I've noticed for months now with Indy.
I think when people see her or Dexter Lumis, they want to see the other person also.
Yeah, like I would much rather see her get called up to the main roster and, you know, do stuff with Indy Lumis. Wow, wrong, I screwed that up. But, you know, reunite Index and things would be amazing.
Well, I mean, and that's what I was going to say, is that aside from the way, when have they ever actually given her a sustained kind of anything?
Right.
So I think that also plays a bit into it. So if they actually give her a month's worth of build, then maybe there will be something there by the time they get to Venice Day.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, Ryan, go ahead.
I have a question about the Extreme Resolution match. Do you think the eventual end game for this feud between Dawn and Fire is that they become a tag team? Because I heard the announcers keep saying about Dawn wanting Fry to embrace, like, the dark side, and that's the only thing I can come up with what the announcers were talking about.
That would be a very – I would be on board with that outcome to this. I certainly think that they can both be assets as singles, especially Kaylee Ray. Gosh, I still do that, especially Alba Fire. But I think that if you've got two people who can, that they're not exactly the same gimmick, but they can, they walk the same line, that same dark line, you could definitely, if you want to treat the women's tag division as important, actually have them be a tag team. And then you will have had your cake and eaten it too, because you've got this really fun match out of them, which we can talk about it now. Mid-show main event. 9 minutes and 36 seconds bell to bell, but this went much longer because they brawled in the back for quite a while before that. Begging the question, if everything's legal and you can fight anywhere, why didn't they just call for the bell when they started fighting in the back? Because they could have just done that after the bell started anyway. But whatever. Rules is rules, even if they don't make sense. So, whatever, it's a 15-20 minute segment, considering this and the women's thing that happened beforehand. I do think that this could be a tag team, but only if there's a plan to. You know what? I'm gonna go ahead and say yes, because I don't see anyone that's going to face Kayden and Katana, Bruce.
So I'm not sure what the end game is. I do think that while having them as a tag team would definitely be a boon to the tag team division, I would rather, especially, like you said, especially Alba Fire, see them as singles competitors. The thing with these two, I will say, is he obviously doesn't pay attention to the disputes he's commenting on, because during the match he said, when Vic said she wants to pull it out of her or whatever, he said something along the lines of, pull what out? Or what are you talking about? Like, dude, have you not been watching the same show we've been watching for the last, I don't know, month? The whole time you've been commentating, but Booker T being a bad commentator is old hat. So, one thing I will commend them on is during this entire feud, not one time have I thought that they didn't want to destroy each other. They always lay into their offense. There's never a moment where I think they're letting up or going light or anything. And I think that show tonight, like even in the backstage brawl part, I don't think there was any moment where I felt like they were trying to play it like safe, or obviously trying to play it safe. It seemed more like they were doing things that you could consider dangerous, but in a trained way, because that's of course what they are. And having that in the tag team division, which right now the champions are more of the acrobatic type, and the only other established tag teams aren't on the same level as what those two would be as a tag team. It would be good. It would be a boon. The only thing, though, is I feel like if you make them a tag team, they have to win the titles in their first title feud. And if you don't do that, then what was the point at all of making them a team? So beyond those concerns, I guess, that could be a good end game. We've seen a lot of the we'll get into a feud, and then after a series of matches, we become teams, like the Bar, for example, I think it was the most recent one. So it's not like it hasn't happened before. So if they go that way, cool. But again, I'd still rather see them as singles competitors, though the tag team division does need a lot of help. I'm still not the biggest fan of throwing two singles wrestlers together to make a tag team. So take that as you may, but yeah.
Nate?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I didn't think about them as tag teams. I know we've actually talked, I think we talked about it on the show, is, you know, that being a potential outcome of you know, that feud. But it hasn't been in the forefront of my brain anyway. I've been kind of considering, I want to call her Kaylee Ray now. Thanks, Kelly. All the fire. I've been kind of thinking she may wind up getting a call up sooner rather than later. And Isla Dawn kind of fills that, you know, kind of mysterious, badass, dark
European woman.
Yeah, you know, that Alba Fire currently holds. But you know, I've been kind of thinking that we're going to see a call up for her for a while now. Granted, we are coming up on WrestleMania season. Usually, you know, we usually see call ups around then. This could be different now that, you know, Vince is gone. Kind of things are different, but traditionally we do see a lot of call ups around WrestleMania, a little after WrestleMania. So that could be coming. But I mean, I would be in favor to see them in a tag team. If that was the direction they were to go, I would be in favor of it. You know, like you said, Kelly, I don't see anybody. Well, there's Ivy Nile and Tatum Paxley, but other than that, I can't even think of any other credible women's tag teams, let alone maybe any other women's tag teams off the top of my head right now.
Well, they just lost a title match too, right?
Right. You know, so like, I guess they could try to get a rematch, and they could certainly build a story there, but you know, I don't know if that would be the direction they'd go either. So seeing Isla Dawn and Alba Fire kind of kick ass as NXT tag team champions for a little while would be pretty sweet. I'd be on board with that. Ryan, go ahead.
I have a question on Paula Cruz losing to Kamala Hayes. Not too much of a screw job finish. Is his potential to get back to the main roster higher? Is it his contract ending, or do you think he's going to really stick with NXT much longer?
I do have more questions than answers coming out of this one. Like, if you're watching the show week to week and there's no such thing as the main roster, then you know that Carmelo Hayes is winning that match and that Axiom's winning the other match. So you can set up Axiom versus Carmelo Hayes. But we're not watching a show where the main roster doesn't exist. So part of me thought that Carmella was losing this match, and then he would kind of fade into the background until it was time for a Royal Rumble. And Carmelo, he doesn't have anything for New Year's Evil, but, I mean, they could tack this tag team match on pretty easily if they want, because it seems like that's where they want to go, or they could tack on a Carmelo versus Axiom match. By the way, fun fact, they got NXT got their match of the year out of the way with the first match of the year. Carmelo Hayes defeating Apollo Crews in a very good affair, 14 minutes and 30 seconds long. Last year, first match of NXT that was televised also was a Carmelo Hayes win. It was Carmelo Hayes over Roderick Strong at New Year's Evil in the unification match for the North American and Cruiserweight Championships. So Carmelo Hayes wins the first match of the year, 2 years running. Let's hope for his sake that he doesn't do that for a third year, because I think he'll probably be on the main roster by then. I think that Apollo is, I'm not going to say good hand. I'm just not going to do it. But he's a very good wrestler. I don't know that he's got main event charisma. He's got main event type wrestling talent. Like, he can wrestle the big man main event match, but he just doesn't, there's something about him that never quite pops to that level, where he's just, and he doesn't quite have the immense size that makes it so it doesn't matter if you don't pop to that level. I think that this company is probably the best one available for him. I think he'd do well in New Japan, well-ish. I think he'd do okay in AEW, but I think that this is probably the company for him, and I think that they like him quite a bit. I would bank on him still staying around, but I don't know that I see top-of-the-card potential for him, Nate.
Now, are you talking top of the card potential on the main roster or top of the card potential in NXT?
Because he didn't win his match with Bron Breakker, I'm going to say both. But what okay. I meant was the main roster.
Okay, that's the way I was taking it, but I wasn't quite sure. So, yeah, I kind of feel the same way about it. I love Apollo Crews. I mean, you know, I've said this before on the show, but like I remember his debut in NXT like it was yesterday. I don't remember the opponent. I can't remember his opponent, but I remember watching him in the ring for the first time. I had heard of Ura Nation, but I had never actually seen him wrestle, and my jaw dropped. And you know, my ex-wife and my you know my roommate, we were sitting there at the time, and I remember them looking at me like, "Wow, we've never seen you react to somebody like this." Like my jaw dropped watching him wrestle. He was, you know, I wouldn't say I hadn't seen somebody move like the way he did, but I was not expecting that, you know. Been a big fan of his for a long time, but I don't see that main roster, or at least like champion potential. I could see him, you know, I think he did a fair job, you know, in the intercontinental scene, U.S. title scene, something like that. Doesn't have the charisma to go up against somebody, you know, even like a Roman Reigns or you know, whatever. Bron Breakker. Sure, we saw that, you know, what, last month before that, whatever it was. But long term, I don't see him in that spot. If he's I'm actually still surprised he's in NXT. You know, with most people that come down from the main roster, with the exception of like Mandy and you know, maybe Drew Gulak, I don't know, we'll see. You know, most people that come down from the main roster go back up. And when Apollo Crews came down, I noticed his WWE.com profile switched from whatever show he's on. I think it was Raw to NXT. So that tells me, you know, and obviously the fact that he's been here for so long now, you know, obviously he's a full blown like NXT guy. I don't know. I don't know if the plan is to send him back up to the main roster. I don't know if he's, and I hate saying this because like I said, I'm a fan, but I don't know if he's necessarily missed by the fans on the main roster. Like if he was to re-debut, because the last time that people on the main roster saw him, he was still, you know, sporting the accent and walking around with Commander Aziz. So I know that wasn't, you know, a huge hit with a lot of people. So I don't know what the reaction would actually be if he was to return in his current state. Hopefully, you know, positive, but you know, I don't know. I don't think there's, let's put it this way. Like, you know, like Kelly said, I don't think there's like championship material there. If he does stick around in NXT, yeah, I think he would be, you know, a good, you know, upper mid card guy, maybe a gatekeeper type, but that's a bit of a stretch, at least for me anyway.
At TakeOver Brooklyn, Apollo Crews made his televised NXT debut against Ty Dillinger.
That's right.
Okay, thank you. Yep, all right.
Bruce, go ahead.
So the only thing that I can say that I disagree with is I think, well, one, I agree that when it comes to the main roster, quote-unquote, it's just there's nothing there for him. And I think NXT is the perfect spot for him. I think he could do well in New Japan because there's less of a importance on giving promos, especially in front of live crowds. So I think that in that sense, he could do well there. But I think NXT is a good spot for him. And then where I disagree is I think they've already shown that he's main event level in NXT because he's been in this program with the NXT champion for however long it's been. Now, does that mean he can be NXT champion someday? I don't know, but we've also seen some interesting NXT champions in the past. So I wouldn't put it past Crews to win the title at some point if he stays in NXT and continues to be built in certain directions. And, you know, it would help if he could win some of his feuds instead of just losing them all the time. But I do think that if he goes back to Raw or SmackDown, it's nothing there for him. He'd be DOA, as they say. And NXT, I think, is where he has the most potential to have a main event level impact. Now, I do think that his lack of out-of-the-ring charisma will be a hindrance, but that's not always an issue in professional wrestling. So if he just continues to do well, he may gain enough organic support to become an NXT champion at some point. But I do think that in terms of main event level, he's there, and he can be sort of that main event level gatekeeper for a certain amount of time unless they really decide to give him that push. And if they give him that push, I do think that he has enough of those in-ring skills to warrant, maybe not warrant, but in due time to engender a certain crowd response that might have the decision makers thinking that we could give him a title run and see what happens with it. So I think NXT is the place that can make the optimal use of his abilities and I guess hide his deficiencies as much as possible.
Brian, if you got one more.
Final questions on that big body hobby, I guess it's like a Christmas album. Do you think that's just a joke, or do you think they'll release it on some sort of social media site like they did with Jillian Hall years ago?
Oh, my God. I did not know I was going to hear about Jillian Hall on this very episode, and I'm glad. I'm glad I did. Because, man, I hated that when it started, but when I really just got into the spirit of the storyline, it made me laugh. To the point where when she showed up in the Royal Rumble a few years ago, I thought it was glorious. And then the mini storyline they did with Billy and Jilly, that's my favorite thing in that Royal Rumble. Fun stuff. So, okay, I'm a record guy, so maybe I don't know how much people know cover art, but the album he was holding up is the Frank Sinatra Christmas album with Frank Sinatra wearing a Santa hat. And it was just either Frank was cut out or Javi was just pasted over it. And then they made the thing on the bottom. I think it would be a wonderful tie-in, especially if Javi is not a very good singer who thinks he's a good singer. If they actually did this, I think that this is exactly the kind of thing you want to do with this kind of character. Just make him, the more delusional that Javier Bernal is, the better his character will continue to work. I said this last week, but I think this can work in the same exact way that Kona Reeves can work, should have worked, did work, was working what the hell? Sorry, I really liked Kona. But Javi, I think, is just a perfectly good low-level heel gatekeeper for guys to step over as they go higher up the card. And to he's basically doing what I thought Andre Chase was going to be doing before Andre turned face and kind of did the thing he's doing. And then Andre has a lot more wrestling talent than I thought that he was going to have. And I see him in that gear, and I just think that can't be right. But he does. But, yeah, I like Javi in this spot. That record is not something they'll sell, at least that record art. But I wouldn't be against the idea of this guy being delusional and puffed up kind of like a Santino, but also utterly clueless like R-Truth in a lot of ways. I really think that Bernal could have a long career, like longer than most of the people who are being pushed on this show. I think he can have a job for a long time. Bruce.
I just want more Big Body Javi and Mackenzie Mitchell segments. I just, their chemistry is great. Her reactions are great. His delusions are great. I don't think they're going to do anything like that. We did see something along the lines with Elias when he first started taking off on Raw back in the day. They even gave him his own special on the network after all. But I do like his positioning because he's perfect for that lower to mid-level card. He'll act that as a gatekeeper. We haven't talked about Oral Mensa yet. And I know you and Kakani talked about it last week, but the first thing I thought when they did that vignette was, oh, it's Oro CN Mensa. So I don't know why they keep going back to this character in NXT. We saw it with Almas. We saw it with Damian Priest. We're seeing it again with Oro Mensa. It hasn't really, how to put this? It kind of worked for Priest at a certain point, but yeah, it's just not something I think. I mean, Almas had to go away from that character and have to get Zelina on there for him to even become, a main event player and NXT champion. So I don't know how much length this character has for Mensa. And I know the question was about Big Body Javi.
That's fine. We're going to keep this rolling with Mensa anyway. Yeah.
Okay, so with Mensa, I'm not sure how much length this character has, but at least for him, he's back on TV after not being on TV for so long, just being the same character he was in NXT UK. So I guess for him, that's a positive because the worst thing you can be right now is a wrestler on NXT who's not on TV. And, you know, as much as you're talking about Chase and how much you dislike his gear, which I as well think about Gacy, how much my opinion of Gacy and the entire, I mean, I still don't like them, but just in terms of their in-ring believability, having Schism going from slacks and button-ups to actually wrestling gear, they just seem much more legitimate. And I think that could happen with Andre Chase to get a little tangent here. But with Mensa, yeah, he's there. He's great. He's a good wrestler. Again, I just don't know if the character is something that will be long-term. But then again, he might not be someone that is long-term for NXT.
I actually love Andre Chase's gear for the same reason I disliked Joe Gacy's gear. Gacy is a guy who's being positioned near the top as a serious threat. Chase is not. Chase can get away with that kind of gear. Gacy, it just falls flat, looking so gimmicky in a spot that's supposed – Duke the Dumpster Drosy cannot be a main eventer, folks. That's what I'm saying. For all you guys who are my age and older.
Unless
you're
running a wrestling simulator and he's in there.
That's right. Oral Mensa, I talked about how cool he was last week. He's still that cool this week. He's a cool, cool dude. And I want to be him when I grow up. 349, he beats Javier Bernal. It's no frills match here, really. I thought Bernal got a little too much offense for... I don't know. Bernal is not going to get offense against a lot of guys, so he might as well get it on a guy who's not, like, super dominant, even though that other guy's going to win. I just I'm going to be Oro's biggest fan for quite a while, and it's really going to hurt me if he doesn't do well. I'm just getting that out of the way now, so when people are just like 6 months from now, if he's floundering and I'm the only guy in his corner, I can say, hey, I told you I was going to do this, so just deal with it.
He's a stubborn one.
I got the stubborn, folks. I was born with it. But yeah, Javi's fun stuff. I think that he can be in this company for a long time. Nate?
I can't disagree with anything you guys have said so far. I'm digging Oro Mensah. You know, this character, again, like you said, I'm not sure how long-term it's going to be. At the same time, I'm also kind of reminded of Carmelo Hayes, when he first debuted. Granted, he didn't have much of a character, but he kind of, evolved over time. We could certainly see something like that with Oro Mensah. I'm not saying obviously evolve into Carmelo Hayes, but you know what I mean? The character evolves and kind of grows over time and could certainly work. I mean, hell, nobody thought Goldust or Kane would have stuck around as long as they did either, So yeah, totally fine with that. Big body Javi, man. He's a riot. From the backstage stuff with the album and everything. I love this guy. And he plays a great loser. He's cocky, but he's going to lose. I think the outcome of this match tonight made so much sense. Javier Bernal can take as many losses as NXT can throw at him, and he'll just find a way to spin it into a positive next week. Like you said, he did get a little bit of offense in. I think it was probably a little bit too much offense, as you said, against Mensah. But at the same time, why not have him do it with somebody that is a little bit down the card, and isn't being booked as dominant, like you said. But yeah, overall, it was a halfway decent match. My point being, the finish certainly made sense. Oro Mensah gets the win. He's the one getting the push right now. Javier Bernal, he can, like I said, he can eat as many losses as possible. So that's what I got to say about that.
Okay. So if you want to get Dijak over as a heel, what's the worst thing you can do? I think that the worst thing you could do is to position him against the only heels on the brand that consistently get booed. Is that the worst thing? I think it's the worst thing you can do if you want to get him over as a heel. And then you have him beat after he is, kidnapping, caught on tape. After he's kidnapped Stacks, and then, let him go free because he's a bad guy with a code. Everybody got to have a code.
Dexter.
Yes. That's The Wire. Everybody got to have a code. That's Wendell Pierce.
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to go down a Wire thing, but let's not. And then he beats Stacks in this match, 3 minutes and 43 seconds. This one was done correctly. Stacks got almost no offense. He got a couple of, false flurries, but that was it. This was him getting flattened to set up something with Tony D. And Tony D gets up there, and he gives a promo that is clearly meant to be a babyface promo. And it's frustrating to me because it seems like they finally found out where they can get some value out of Tony D'Angelo, who is not, he's not like a wrestling dynamo. He's slow and methodical, and he's really a throwback heel. He's denying the fans what they want to see in terms of, like, he's expanding his moveset, but he's still wrestling like, I feel like the best case scenario for him is going to be like a Baron Corbin, and that's not a bad thing. To be up there losing important matches, but occasionally just kind of trading wins and losses in unimportant matches. And that's, I think that he can be valuable as a heel, and I just don't see it as a babyface. And he tried to do a babyface promo against Dijak, and it didn't work because they're both heels, And the only difference is Dijak is cool and Tony D is hella lame because he's supposed to be. Okay, so Dijak over Stax, 343. Bruce?
Another kidnapping and torture angle on NXT. If I remember correctly, it was early in 2022 when Rick Steiner was kidnapped by the Schism. So, you know, we have these a lot. Keith Jarrett was a good move. Yeah. That's all I got to say, I guess.
I forgot the name of Feast Your Eyes when I did the recap.
So did I.
Yeah, I just
it's explained it at the beginning of a sentence instead of at the end of a sentence.
I explained the move as if I'd never seen it before. Like, oh, he did this kind of thing that, you know, I've seen 475 times on this very show.
Nate? Yeah, I called it a reverse fireman's carry to knee finisher because, like, yeah, I'm like, do they have a name for this? Feast Your Eyes. Man, all right. It's been a while, Dijak. It's been a while. So, yeah, I don't know. I can't really make heads or tails of why they're doing this either. I mean, they're still billing, you know, well, it's seemingly billing, you know, Stax and D'Angelo as heels. However, tonight, I mean, man, I felt like, you know, they were trying to get sympathy on Stax here, you know, with it, because he kept, you know, kind of Stax would get beaten down, then he'd kick out of a finisher, or not a finisher, he'd kick out of a power move, get a little bit of offense in on Dijak and come back, you know. And it was like, I was kind of like, all right, this kid's got a little bit of heart. All right, you know, and actually kind of getting some sympathy there on Stax. And I'm thinking to myself, is that what they're going for? Like, is that really what they're going for? Are they trying to turn D'Angelo and Stax right now? Are they trying to turn Stax against D'Angelo? I don't know. It's weird. I don't know really what more to say about it.
I don't know. It's been months since they killed someone. I think it's time to turn.
Yeah. You know, you're right. It's about time. We're due for another murder, I guess, here on NXT. Yeah. I don't think this is the greatest way to build up Dijak either. I think, you know, like you said, Dijak has a lot of potential. He's got an absolute lot of potential. And especially in this iteration of the character, I really like this character, but going heel versus heel right now, unless there's going to be some major blow off that, you know, swaps some alignments here, or there's, you know, some big story at the end of this match, I don't know. I really question this decision too.
Bruce, did I throw to you?
You did.
You did.
Okay, cool. I'm sitting here figuring out the rest of the show and I couldn't remember. Let's go to tag team stuff. We've got a scene early on with New Day and Pretty Deadly. New Day making Pretty Deadly jump through some hoops to get a match if they want. Schism shows up in this scene also. Later on, we get another scene after Kofi Kingston has dispatched Joe Gacy. 5 minutes and 22 seconds. As I wrote in my recap, this is the kind of thing where Gacy can win the match and it makes sense because you're moving towards something. But on the other hand, Kofi is a main roster former champion, so I'm fine with him winning a few matches that storyline-wise he maybe shouldn't. So I'm fine with him taking out Joe Gacy here in this match that was a big mess of activity involving a lot of people on the outside. And this is all moving to a, I love how they said that that we're going to get a gauntlet match, and Pretty Deadly says three other teams. We got to beat three other teams. They didn't say what the three other teams are. We can assume that the Schism are one of them. But I don't know what else we can assume because, the two big ones are in their own tag match. So I don't know, folks. I think it's going to be the return of Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch. I don't know. I don't know what I've got for you, but
don't play me like that. Don't play me like that.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I almost got to say Danny Burch's name earlier because I saw that Apollo Crews's first victim in NXT, non-televised, was Danny Burch, wrestling as Martin Stone. That's how far that back
wow.
this goes. So, and then you've also got Indus Share and the Creed Brothers. I thought that their video package, the two teams here, quick to the point, probably the best bit of hype they did for one of next week's matches tonight. I thought that was good stuff. So tag team division, the state of it. Bruce.
To Nate's earlier point about maybe having the New Day in the main event segment because of Kofi Kingston, they drew their biggest ratings and viewership with the New Day in the main event a week or two ago. So it would have made sense to have Kofi in the main event. But you also said, Kel, you know, it's a go-home show. They want to make sure you have an understanding of what the big match going into next week is. And also, as you said, this isn't a match that is a feud extender. It's more of just a match for a match sake. And regarding Gacy and Kingston's match specifically, I did like beforehand how you brought up the fact that with Kingston, he's a former champion, so you're not going to really have Gacy go over here. I like how Gacy brought it up. And, like, you're a former WWE champion, the greatest WWE tag team champion of all time. And that's just a nice reminder to the fans that who you have on the show right now is, in WWE terms, a first ballot Hall of Famer, a certifiable legend. And because of that, I think any group, any team, any individual that gets in the ring with either of the members of the New Day or both really are, if not getting a rub, they're at least, I have to believe the New Day is asking to work with these teams. And if that's the case, because I feel like they have enough pull for that. If that's the case, then for the New Day, or for Schism and any of the people that work with them, you have to take that for everything it's worth. You have to build their knowledge and just be glad you're working with them. And I think this is going to help Schism in the long run. Now, I do think the former Grizzled Young Veterans, Dyad, they do make a good point that they really haven't had a shot yet, and they're going to run up the other teams. I do think two of the other teams at least will be Briggs and Jensen, and then the Dyad. Who the third team might be, it could be a returning Gallus, depending on all those issues, if they're resolved or not. Aside from that, like you said, Indus Share and the Creed Brothers have their own match coming up on the show next week, so that's probably not going to happen. But as far as tag team division in general, I think the New Day is definitely a boon. I think they need to start early in terms of putting, regardless of if the title change from the New Day happens sooner or later, I think they need to start putting some legitimized teams for us to get behind as a build. You know, next week's match with Indus Share and the Creed Brothers is probably one of those matches that's going to give us a team that has a legitimate shot of beating the New Day without any sort of gimmicks or anything. I think Pretty Deadly, of course, is there, but I just don't feel like, as much as I love them, I just feel like with Carmelo Hayes, they're running stagnant if they're just on NXT, though working with the New Day definitely helps. It might be a good way for them to, practice before they hit the main roster and how to work main roster things. So beyond that, though, I think, you know, Indus Share probably has to be the one that takes the title off of them eventually, which probably will be Stand and Deliver. And so you work towards that. But again, the gauntlet match, the other good part about this was how Xavier Woods said, oh, gauntlet matches, something like, oh, we know a thing or two about gauntlet matches. So they're playing into history a good bit here. They're channeling it more than they did when Vince McMahon was still in charge of everything. So it's really good that we have that. And as far as the gauntlet match is concerned, that's easier to cover than a battle royal. So I'll use that as my come down match, I guess, next week.
The state of the tag team union, Nathaniel Herbert Lindberg.
Yeah, I like that, Herbert. Okay, why not? So state of the tag teams. So I'll start with Indus Share and Diamond Mine, or I guess the Creed Brothers. I think the right now, I think Indu's share like might be one of my favorite teams down in NXT, if not my favorite team right now. I'm surprised I'm saying that, but I really like their style and the way that they're approaching this match with the Creeds, the way that, you know, they only want the Creeds at 100%. They look at the Creeds, they respect them, they see them as, you know, one of the best, and they're just like, hey, we want them at their best. And, you know, they've gone out of their way to make sure the Creeds are, you know, healthy. They've helped them out in matches, you know, whatnot. I dig that. Like, I really dig that. It's kind of almost like I feel like they're, in a way, like if you kind of look at this, you know, from a different perspective, it almost seems like Sangha and you know, what's the other guy's name? I can't think of his name. Shanky?
Veer.
No, that's not Shanky. Veer. Shanky. Jesus. Yeah, Shake.
Wow.
I know.
Wishes.
I said, I, wow. It's coming
Veer
out of my mouth, and I'm like, that's not the right word. It's not the right name. Veer Mahan. He's coming to Raw. Still, probably, maybe, someday. I don't know. But, you know, the way that they present themselves, you know, I really dig it. So what I was trying to say before I, you know, threw Shanky in there, if you look at this from a different perspective, it almost seems like Indu Share are the faces and the Creed brothers are the heels. Like if you had no idea what the backstory was and you watched this vignette tonight, you know, you see these two guys, you know, dressed proper, like prim, proper, kind of, you know, talking with respect. And then you see the Creed brothers, you know, kind of almost like yelling at the end and do share, you know, in their vignette. Well, it was the same vignette, but you know what I mean? When they start talking, you can kind of take it that way. So I don't know. I'm really digging Indu Share right now. Like you said, I think, like we've all said, I think it's one point or another on this show at various episodes. Indu Share has to be the ones to take the titles off of the New Day. I feel like they're the only team that would make sense, with the exception of Pretty Deadly winning them back. But I don't feel like that's, I don't know. That just kind of seems like meh, whatever, you know, not super special. Indu Share, on the other hand, you know, they're huge. They're menacing. I mean, you're going up against the New Day. They're multiple time, 13 time tag team champions or something like that together. Kofi, even, you know, bigger, you know, more tag team champions under his belt, former WWE champion. So, I mean, there's not just anybody, not just any team is going to be able to go up against them. Indu Share could potentially do it. And, you know, I have a feeling Indu Share is going to wind up beating the Creed brothers here tonight, you know, next week at New Year's Evil. And then potentially, you know, challenge the New Day. What was the other tag team thing here tonight? We were talking about Kofi and Schism.
Just the fact that they're working towards a four-way match.
Yeah.
There's something going on with Schism, yes, but there's something going on with Pretty Deadly, too. They're teasing both teams as potential next challengers.
Yeah, I thought you said there was like another tag team match on the card tonight, and I was like, no.
No, two tag team matches next week, the four-way and then Indu Share versus Creeds.
Right. So,
there's a four-way, too. Oh, God.
Not four-way, gauntlet.
The gauntlet.
Sorry,
the gauntlet.
Sorry. Okay. Not trying to add matches to your plate there, man.
Yes. So, but yeah, I think that's about, you know, probably about good. I don't think I have much to add that you guys haven't already covered.
13-time champion, Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston is so old, he was tag team champions with Evan Bourne in a tag team called Air Boom. There you go. That's how old I am. Evan Bourne was going to be a big deal until
the RKO.
Yeah, well, until they found something in his that he was trying to smuggle from one. Let's not talk about what happened with Evan Bourne and what didn't. Okay. Andre Chase versus Drew Gulak. Oh, my God. I like Drew Gulak. What a wrestler. 4 minutes, 28 seconds, he defeats Andre Chase via tap. what I said in my recap is I don't think that they've misused Drew Gulak exactly, but every time I see him, I'm just so psyched I get to see him, even if it's just for a few minutes like this. He's such a good wrestler, and as a junior heavyweight in New Japan, that is where I think his calling would have been. But if he doesn't want to go there, he doesn't want to go there. So there you go. 428, he's the winner. Andre Chase had his scene earlier. They got a real weird thing going with Drew Gulak, Hank Walker, and Chase University. Thea Hale still trying to be a vocal part of this, and Drew Hudson? Is that? Sorry, so many names.
Hank Williams?
Definitely not Hank Williams.
Who are you talking about? Hank Walker.
Yeah, Hank Williams is long dead.
Yeah, we're on Hank Williams the fourth now. The fourth is making his emergence. We a lot of moving parts in this feud. Once again, Chase U not getting themselves onto major shows, but they're always a better part of the TV show. So Gulak wins in 428. We also haven't talked about Axiom over Trick Williams. Only 307 of this aired, but we know that they started during the break, so probably more like 6 minutes this match. Axiom is wonderful, but I really, really want to call out that because we know that about Axiom now. But Trick has come so far in such a small amount of time. And I know we said it last week, Kitani and I did, but I always thought that Trick was going to have to stay back while Carmelo Hayes went up. And Trick is so good now, I think that they should just go up together. I really think this act goes up together. They split these acts all the time, but I'm begging them not to split up Mello.
Yeah, I actually kind of said something like that in the hits and misses tonight, talking about Trick Williams. I feel like Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes, in their current incarnation, the way they are right now, they're basically just a license to print money. If you were to bring them up to the main roster and throw them in a meaningful feud, I feel like you are going to get people you need to get people behind them. Man, you're going to be able to sell a whole bunch of merch with those two. They would be able to push a ton of merch. I feel like Carmelo Hayes, that's how I've felt about it, you know, for months? I mean, you know, almost a year at this point, maybe even more than a year at this point. I time is flying. But however long Trick Williams has been with Carmelo Hayes, I think it was the beginning of 2.0. It's a little bit, a year and a half or so. I always thought Trick would probably wind up staying back when Carmelo, you know, was to go up, but I really think they should stick them together. Trick Williams adds so much to that act, where it's almost at a point that I don't feel like Trick Williams is part of the act, and he's now, like, I wouldn't say an equal. He's not quite an equal, but he's, he's Trick Williams. He's not necessarily Carmelo's sidekick anymore, if that makes sense. The other match we were talking about was Andre Chase and Drew Gulak. Just like Kelly, I really like watching Drew Gulak. This match was certainly not for everybody. A lot of people that watch NXT want to watch something like our opener between Carmelo Hayes and Apollo Crews. But that's not what this was. I think that, you know, like, I know, you know, looking out in the crowd and everything, granted, I feel like tonight's crowd was a little bit muted overall. But looking out the crowd during this match, you know, there was a lot of people kind of sleeping on it. I thought it was fantastic. I love watching a couple great technical wrestlers get in there and do what they do best. You know, Drew Gulak is certainly, you know, one of the better technical wrestlers out there. Andre Chase is certainly not bad himself. I thought it was a halfway decent match. I had a point and I completely lost it. So I'm going to just throw it back to you before I look any more foolish than I normally do.
The point you had but forgot is the fact that Thea Hale is hilarious, because when Drew Gulak fell on the apron, She got out her loudspeaker and yelled at him. I really wanted him to oversell that. It's like, what the hell are you doing? He didn't do that because overselling is not what Drew Gulak does. And maybe that holds him back a little. But overdoing things is what Thea Hale does. So there you go.
She is so funny. I love Thea Hale.
Yeah, she kind of saved the last couple of bad segments in the women's segment.
She was the best part of that segment.
OMG, girl fight, let's go. Oh, God, joy. She brings joy. All right.
I think the line was, there are so many girls in the ring. Girl fight, let's go.
Yep.
Great.
Go ahead, Bruce.
So, because Ultimo Dragon was one of my favorite wrestlers as a kid, I love any variation of Dragon Sleeper, like Ivy Nile's Dragon Slayer, and of course, Gulak. So it's always good to see that. Hank Walker might not be great in the ring, but what he is great at is having that, wait, what face that he had when Gulak said next week it's going to be him versus Dempsey. Like, wait, but what? So you mean, at least he has that going. He has very, I guess, if not affable, a lovable to a certain extent demeanor to him, because he's just so out of his league, and yet he's doing his best to try and make it. Regarding Axiom Trick Williams, as you said, Trick's improvement has been amazing considering the short amount of time that he's been doing this. It kind of reminds me of when we first talked about Carmelo Hayes when he first hit NXT, and the rawness was there, but you also could see the potential, and Hayes really grew into that really quickly, and Williams, we knew as a character that he definitely had it, because as a mouthpiece, he's done well. He can be a little over the top at times, but I do think now there's less question of him being moved up alongside Carmelo Hayes when they do go together. Like, if Hayes makes an appearance in the Royal Rumble as an entrant, I could see Williams walking out with him and being on the ringside with him as he is for most of the matches, instead of just kind of not appearing or just being in the background and going to the back. So for me, I think you have to really commend Hayes, or not Hayes, but Williams, for the improvement he's had while working with Hayes and while developing on. It's not to think about the fact that you're doing all this and you're learning on the fly on national TV in front of an audience pretty much live every week. That's not an easy thing to do. So, gotta commend them. And when it comes to Axiom, we knew he was great. I have to say, every time I see it, I think the golden ratio is becoming one of my favorite finishers. The main reason is we see so many super kicks, but we don't see a lot of running, jumping thrust kicks to the face. And he does it so smoothly, so well. It always seems to land nice. So I really like how they've been building Axiom leading into and since the best of three series with Nathan Frazer, and of course his performance at the Iron Survival Challenge match. So the tag team, like you said, the tag team match is probably the way they go, but I think that if you're looking at any of these four as someone to mark as being in the main event of NXT in the future, or even soon, I'd say put some money on Axiom and really give it to him, because something about going under the mask has let a bit of a kid's personality come out, I guess, which is weird to say, but I really like Axiom as a character, what he's been doing. I was a little questioning at first, but he's done really well. Again, that finisher is just so, so good. And if it does come down to a tag team match, I think the way to go is to have Axiom be the one to pin Williams, should it come down to that.
All right, you can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. This is from JB. Number one, I know the prevailing sentiment seems to be that the newest version of Joe Gacy and his stable is more palatable than what they were originally trying to do. With that being said, I can't help but feel that grizzled young veterans have the potential to be so much more if they weren't currently entwined with the schism. I really liked what GYV originally brought to the table, and I wish they could truly unleash themselves in the tag division. Number two, is Chase U setting the table to be broken into two factions, one led by Andre Chase and another one led by Drew Gulak? As always, love the show and go VIP. Yeah, I have not been quiet about saying that grizzled young veterans should be a thing on their own. There is no reason at all that they should be absorbed into a team with a different mouthpiece that is lesser than the mouthpiece that they have. If you want to keep them in schism, Zach Gibson should be the mouthpiece because he's better than Joe Gacy. And if you don't want to keep them together, great. I think that this is one faction that even though they're doing some okay stuff right now, they are going to be very fractured before they ever reach the main roster. They are not going up together. Is Chase U setting the table to be broken into two factions? I would consider yes if they were higher up on the card, but this is not exactly NWO Black and White versus NWO Wolfpack, so I'm going to say probably not, but I don't know. I didn't think Gulak would be around this long, so I'm not entirely sure, Bruce.
Yeah. So first, the Chase U question. If they do split them into two factions, I need a resolution to what the hell Duke Hudson's been trying to do with Chase U, because that hasn't been thoroughly been wrapped up, I guess, even though it seemed pretty clear a week or two ago when he gave somebody the hug, he had that nefarious grin on him. So I'm guessing that there's something. Maybe he's the one who brought Gulak in. I mean, he was the one who was kind of standing in the corner while Gulak was doing his training session and telling Chase what was going on when Chase came in and asked what the F was going on. So maybe they're connected somehow in that way. But then where does Hank, why is Hank? There's just some things that I think need to be addressed before we have any sort of breakup of the two. Although it did seem like when Hudson was initially doing his stuff, I kept saying it was a means to take Via Hale away from Andre Chase. For what purpose? I don't know, but that just seemed the likely scenario to me. And now I'm not sure, because unless Gulak was hired by Hudson, then what is this about, really? And if that's the case, then where does Charlie Dempsey come into things? Because there's just too many things I feel like that need to be addressed before there's any discussion of those two breaking up. And then the other part of the question was, I forgot already.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at the next one to figure out what we were going to do. GYB and the schism.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yep.
We said it since the beginning that it's just a travesty what happened. The one thing I will say is they consistently showed us at NXT that GYV was going to be in the top matches in the tag team division, but not win the titles. And that being the case, I think a character change was fine. The issue, of course, is they've definitely taken a step down. I will quibble with you and say that, well, I guess you said mouthpiece and not. I think the mouthpiece and leader is actually Ava Rain and not Joe Gacy. So that's something I'd quibble with what you were saying, Kelly. But aside from that, yes, Gibson is still the best talker out of the four of them. So though I have been surprised Rip Fowler is the best talker out of all of them, though I have been impressed by Jagger Reed's promo ability since they became part of Schism. So, yeah, I guess don't break Chase U up yet. And it's a travesty what happened to GYV.
Nate?
It's travesty that would happen to GYV. I definitely share those sentiments. I can understand wanting to put them, you know, in a team like that because of probably, you know, what they can kind of bring to the team and whatever. But yeah, I feel like they had so much more potential doing what they were doing. They were so much more interesting. You know, right now I feel like anybody could fill the role of the dyad. You know, there's nothing that is unique about either one of the two of them for that particular role in the dyad. Whereas as Grizzly Young Vets, they were, you know, they were both great. I don't know. I think it was a bad choice. I'm not sure exactly what the heck they were trying to do there. But as far as like Joe Gacy, you know, lately and, you know, the stable lately being a little more palatable. Yes. I definitely agree there, especially with the attire change for, you know, Joe Gacy, which I believe Bruce talked about a little bit earlier tonight. With Chase Yu and Andre, you know, and Drew Gulak, and the question about it potentially being broken up into two different factions. I think it's too early to tell too. You know, I think there's definitely going to be something that happens, you know, between Drew Gulak and Andre Chase, you know, a little more so than what we just saw tonight, but I don't know what that's going to lead to. You know, like, you know, just like Bruce brought up, you know, what's going on with the whole Drew Cudson thing? You know, that kind of just got dropped. I wouldn't say dropped, but forgot about, I guess, at least for the time being. So I'd like to get some sort of resolution to that or have them come back to that. You know, like Bruce said, it could always be linked, but I don't know. I think it's a little bit too early to tell exactly what's going to be going on with that particular feud.
This comes from Blake Riley. Hey guys, a few things. Number one, that was the most we've ever learned about Indus Share, and I really loved it. Do you expect them to be the team to beat New Day for the titles? I think
yes,
we all agree.
Do.
Yes. Uh-huh. Number two, do you think the loser of Breaker Waller will be in the Rumble? If so, I expect Waller to lose. I do think so, and I think Breaker will lose. Number three, not a question, but I really wish there was a way to just shut off Booker's commentary during the show. I know you're not a fan of Vic, but at least he doesn't make me want to pull my hair out, and I don't have a lot of hair to pull out. I have done a lot of podcasts with Blake for the Blake and Sal show with Mark. It's a really fun time. I can confirm Blake doesn't have a lot of hair to pull out. Not a criticism. It's just a fact of life. But yeah, I still like Vic less than I look like Booker, and I don't want you to take that as a comment stating that I like Booker T.
How I'm going to take it, though.
Don't. Kelly, I hope you make it through the night tonight and watch Wrestle Kingdom. I'll be watching on delay after work. Oh, I'm going to do my damnedest. Side note, I told my boss I was watching Japan's version of WrestleMania. He's not a wrestling fan, so I had to explain it in simple terms. And I won't be on the road after 9 p.m., and he told me as long as I answer emails to enjoy the show. I really do love my job. I love your job, too, and I don't even know what you do. Blake, Torch VIP, co-host of the Blake and Sal show with Mark, getting ready to celebrate our 10-year anniversary. Well, congratulations, damn it. Anything on this email that I didn't cover, Nate?
Let's see. So first off, congratulations on the 10-year anniversary of the show, guys. That is awesome. Yeah, I mean, basically, we kind of covered pretty much everything, I think, that we brought up here. Let's see. So, yeah, Indus Share, do we expect them to be the ones to beat New Day for the titles? Yes. You know, to think loser of Breaker Wall will be in the Rumble. If so, expect Waller to lose. Yeah, maybe. And Booker T's commentary, I don't really think there's a whole heck of a lot for me to talk about here. So we'll just move on.
Anything to add, Bruce?
Nope.
All right.
Our final email comes from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. What did you all think of the build to New Year's Evil? It was there. I enjoyed the final segment. Oh, my God. Kevin. That is the last thing I thought I was going to read. I enjoyed the final
segment.
Kevin
is suspended from the podcast.
Good thing he had such a good show last week. And we did. We had a great show last week. Oh, I enjoyed the final segment and thought Braun held up his end rather well. what percentage do you place on Braun retaining? Provided he does, who is his next challenger? Many of the top males seem to be involved in other programs right now. That is one reason I don't think he's retaining. But I keep getting this wrong, so I don't know. Finally, who do you think will emerge as the Women's Battle Royale winner? Will they be wanting to create a face-face matchup, a stick to the traditional face-heel matchup? Covered all of that, including that latter part. I think face-face does not serve Roxanne this early in her development. Thanks, as always, for your thoughts. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. And bonus point, office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. I think that we, yeah, lots of top males in other programs. So, yeah, we've kind of covered that. I just really want to see a new champion and the other side of the aisle important and getting title shots. On the other hand, if they're turning Tony D face and Grayson wins the championship and I have to suffer through a D'Angelo Waller championship feud, I'll probably just die. Bruce.
Thanks for throwing to me after that. Don't have much else to add because I talked about Indy Hartwell and whatnot. So in that last segment, let's just say I disagree with the good professor.
Yep, it. Oh.
I'm not even a trained actor and I disagree.
I really like Kevin. That is what I'm going to say in lieu of saying anything about that segment. Nate.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about most of this earlier. So, you know, I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add either. You know, I think with the women, I don't think they're going to be. Well, yeah, we talked about that. I think it might be Tiffany Stratton. So yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add here either. We kind of talked about most of it earlier.
My name is Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. I am working on a game that I'm either going to call Isolation or Numb, depending on which way I go with it. But that's what I'm doing right now because you were obviously wondering. Thank you for listening to the end, by the way. Bruce, who are you?
You're telling me that it's going to depend on how much alcohol you had that day. Gotcha. I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood, and you can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And next week, hopefully, my hand survived covering a gauntlet match and a 20-woman battle royal.
You know, I want to slap back, but the name Numb literally does refer to alcohol. So, well sussed out, Bruce. Nate.
I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out if you'd like to do so.
We thank you as always for following the torch, and we'll see what this very long night brings for me. Wrestle Kingdom, folks. Let's do this, and we will see you in 7 here on PWT Talks NXT. Cheers.